Go to your room and think about what you've done. If you've ever heard that as a child and thought, oh my goodness, what have I done wrong? I must have done something wrong. This is so sad for me. And now as a parent, you're wondering if timeouts are appropriate, especially if you're parenting a sensitive kid. I definitely want us to dive into this today because we are going to talk about the number one reason why timeouts are not only wrong, but ineffective for parenting your sensitive child, especially if your child is having daily meltdowns. So let's dive in. Hello, and welcome to How to Parent Your Highly Sensitive Child Like a Ninja. I'm your host, Megan Thompson, licensed clinical professional counselor and registered play therapist supervisor. We at MTC teach parents how to eliminate the daily meltdown and shutdown cycle for your sensitive children and teens. Highly sensitive children make up 15 to 20% of the population, according to research that has been gathered for over a century. And this podcast answers one question: how can you raise emotionally intelligent children, stop walking on eggshells, and help your child express their needs safely without punishments, yelling, or coddling? If you want to know the answer, you're in the right place. Now, if you're a parent whose kiddo is feeling big feelings, they have lots of thoughtful observations about the world, they tend to notice small details in their environment, which might also mean that they can be easily overstimulated. And when they're calm, they can be the most compassionate, kind, caring children, wise beyond their years. And yet when they're not calm, if your child is stuck in the meltdown cycle, your child could be hitting, kicking, screaming, yelling, throwing things and running away from you, or saying things like, I hate you, you don't love me, all kinds of self-deprecating or exclusive conversation where you might feel like the worst parent ever, or they might even be calling you that. Then it is important that you're listening up, because that is not part of your kid's true personality, yet it is a symptom of what I call the compassionate meltdown cycle. Now, if you've just met me, I'm Megan Thompson, licensed clinical professional counselor, registered play therapist supervisor, and here at MTC, we help parents of highly sensitive kids eliminate the daily meltdowns in as little as 8 weeks. So here's where we're going to focus today. Timeouts were a big thing, right? They were a big thing when we were parented, especially those of you raised by boomers. And it made a lot of sense. If we weren't going to smack our kids around anymore, like many of our parents were hit as children, right? Then let's remove love in a different way. Let's banish them to their room, okay? Now, what happens in this dynamic as a child is that you are sent away from your parents' care. Now, as a parent, you might be saying, go to your room and think about what you've done and come back when you're ready. And there is a hugely popular parenting book out there. It talks about counting to three and teaching your child to take time from their day after if they don't follow through with your expectations. They're supposed to, upon the count of three, take time based on how old they are to sit on a chair or a staircase or a bench, whatever you got, right? I remember growing up, there was the timeout bench at my friend's house because my mom and my best friend's mom, Ann, shared the parenting. We didn't call her Ann. But I won't use her last name. We called her Mrs. So-and-so, right? And we had time out at her house too, right? This was the 80s. We grew up with this. So the 90s, I should say, early 90s, as well as the mid to late 80s, when we were all parented with time out. And there was a big book that came out in the 90s focused on magically helping children follow through on parenting expectations. And it is probably still one of the top resources that pediatricians recommend to parents of sensitive kids today. And I am here to tell you that that book needs to go in the trash. Trash. Throw it out. It's the worst. It's the worst. All right. Now, I've given you enough hints to figure out what book it is, all right, without me getting sued here. So what I'm going to do instead is really focus on helping you notice that the policy of using timeout in any way, shape, or form simply will not work in teaching your child how to manage their emotions, regulate their behavior, and follow through on your expectations. And it is because there is one simple principle that is totally overlooked for children, especially young children, when timeout is used. And it is the experience your child has inside their brain, all right? So the number one reason why your child will never learn from timeout what you want them to learn, which is that they feel like their experience was wrong, they are going to think about what they could have done differently, they're going to come back to you and apologize, right? That's the whole premise of timeout, is that when you separate your child from the activity or from you, you are giving your child a break from whatever it is that they were doing. You're showing them that their behavior was completely unacceptable in that moment, and what they need to be doing is something different, more focused on positive social relationships. And so they need to take space from that experience, think about what they've done, contemplate what they could be doing differently, contemplate the fact that their behavior was wrong, and then feel bad about it. Feel guilty enough to be motivated by that guilt to apologize. Feel guilty, feel embarrassed enough and be motivated by that embarrassment and apologize. Or feel motivated by separation from you as their parent enough to apologize, right? Once the apology happens, then the child comes back to play and gets what they want, which is a relationship and the play, whatever's happening, the event, and also time with their toys, if they threw it, you know, whatever's going on. Or they rejoin, come back to the family, they rejoin the family and engage in the family's activities. Now, that might sound super effective, right? You might think with your adult brain that this is a perfect example of cause and effect, right? I hit my sister, I get removed from family sister event, I get put on stairs. I feel bad about that because I don't like being put on the stairs. I think about what I did. I choose not to do it again. I feel sorry. I feel bad because I'm a good kid. I have a heart. I'm going to feel compassion for my sister. I'm going to come back to the play and I'm going to choose not to hit my sister or quote unquote throw a fit or have a meltdown or whatever it is that you might be wanting to your child to change their behavior. Right now, timeouts are typically taught for younger children, separation from the family, and we count, right? That's the thing. I never use this strategy because I'm going to get to that in a little bit, but this is what pediatricians will tell you is exactly what your kid needs. Even school counselors, right? People who are not in the nitty gritty. And I've actually seen therapists teach this. Quite frankly, I've seen therapists using evidence-based trauma treatments teach timeouts to manage ineffective, unsafe behavior. Whew, don't even get me started, but I'll get started later. But what I want to say is that you have probably heard about timeouts, not just from your own childhood, but also from experts, people who are telling you they know about child development, they know about helping children develop into functional members of society, and yet they are using a completely wrong tactic to change behavior. And when I say wrong, I mean, not only is it ineffective, I'm not necessarily saying morally wrong. It is ineffective. It will not reach the outcome you're looking for. And this is based purely on neuroscience. We're just going to look at human psychology, how the brain works, and why timeout is ineffective. In addition to the fact that it makes the kid feel like crap when they already did something that they naturally feel like crap about, okay? So we're double jeopardying the situation. What happens when you're in a double jeopardy situation? You feel shame. So reason number one why timeout doesn't work is because it is a shame-leveraged behavior tactic, behavior management tactic, all right? So when you use shame to try to leverage behavior, you will actually keep your child stuck. Now, I want to dive into that later. First, what I want to do is pay attention to why timeout will not work for your child, especially if they are under the age of six, right? So here's what's going on in your child's brain. Your child's brain is focused on what's going on right now in the moment when they are present to the moment, right? When your child is present to the moment and they are thinking about what they're doing in that moment, they are in the here and now. They are. So if they're coloring, they are noticing the color going to the paper, right? If they are present to the moment, they are noticing the color going to the paper. If they are present to the moment, they are noticing their sister come into their space, reach for the crayon in their hand, pull the crayon out of their hand, and they have the opportunity to recoil, pull the crayon back, yell, "Mommy, help!" or choose a different activity. Those are all appropriate behaviors for a 4, 5, 6-year-old who has a younger 2-year-old sibling, right? And yet in a situation where you're seeing your 4, 5, 6-year-old smack their 2-year-old sister, scream, body on the floor, full on meltdown, what is critical to understand is that your child might have been coloring, but they are not present to the moment. And so what that means is that their choice to hit their sibling is reactive. It is not intentional. They did not think before they did it. They just acted. It's a stress response. And so what's important to understand is if your child is in a fight or flight stress response, they're just reacting. They're not present to the moment, right? You hear me when I'm saying that? So what that means is that your child cannot physically think about the fact that they're reacting because in that moment, they're not present to the moment. They're reacting, all right? So that means they're not capable in that moment, if they're not present to the moment, to slow down time enough to notice that they're getting angry and that their sibling is about to come to them and pull it away. And then they have a choice to either pull it back or yell for mommy for help or leave the activity, right? All three options I'm sure you would prefer over your kid smacking your other kid, right? Okay. So here's the deal. When you are telling your child to go take a timeout after this behavior, you are telling your child that they know how to talk to themselves inside their mind. This requires what is called inner speech. Now, if you look up inner speech, you will find on a very simple Google search that inner speech does not start to become developed in a child's brain where they talk to themselves about what they're doing or about their thoughts until age six. It doesn't start to develop until age six. Prior to age six, so before age six, children start to talk to themselves out loud. So you've seen your 4, 5, 6-year-old, right? And stay with me. If your kid's 9, 10, 11, stay with me. I'm going to help you notice that if you've used timeout in the past, why you're still stuck in meltdowns, even if you've stopped timeouts. This is relevant for you regardless of your kid's age. Stay with me. 4, 5, 6, when they're playing and they are having thoughts in addition to mindfully playing, they are speaking them out loud. You see them singing to themselves. You see them talking to themselves. They are having those conversations out loud. It's called private speech, right? So when we're talking about timeout, we are literally asking the child's brain to do something that it's not capable of doing. So if I put you on a soccer field and I said to you, and you're on like the opposite end, and I said to you, kick this ball as hard as you can and land it into the corner left pocket, top left pocket of that goal. Could you do it? Are you a superstar? Do you know how to do that? All right. I know I don't. So I'm just going to use myself as an example. I know that I could probably try to hit it with the side ball of my foot, But for sure, it is not making it anywhere near the corner pocket of that goal, let alone even getting in the goal, if I'm 100% honest with you, right? There's a reason they put me in midfield when I played soccer back in elementary school and middle school. I was not very good at it. So they just had me run and be a body in the field. Stay out of everybody's way and try to cause a distraction. I'm pretty sure that was the whole plan that this coach wanted for me. So bless Coach Kettle, had patience with my parents' interest in signing me up for soccer year after year. But anywho, what I'm getting at is really understanding that your child, if you put yourself in the soccer field, okay, and you are told on the opposite end, you're in the defense, behind the center line, I'm talking about being at midfield on your side of the field here, and you're being told, kick it into the corner pocket. And the coach is looking at you and saying, do it. Do it. Do it, and then you can rejoin the team. Once you do that, then you can rejoin the team. You're going to look at the coach, and in your head, you're going to say, well, I can't do that. I don't know how to do that. What am I supposed to be doing? And you'll get stuck. You'll get frozen. And how you feel? You'll feel sad. You'll feel disappointed. You'll feel like you're going to let somebody down, right? You'll start to criticize yourself. You'll start to feel embarrassed. You'll start to feel helpless. You'll start to feel ashamed. So when you ask a child to do something that their brain literally cannot do, they will start to feel bad about themselves, right? So when you're using timeout for young children, this is all based on theory, pure theory. So psychology back in the day tried to take the adult perspective and put it into a child's body, right? This is like archaic psychology, right? So short little history lesson. Children's were used to in psychology, used to be thought of as mini adults, right? Now, plenty of research and observation and theorizing happened in the 1900s. And at the beginning of the 1900s, the 1920s, they started to assess that children actually experienced the world differently than adults. And as a result, that meant that they needed to be taught differently. And actually, Sigmund Freud's daughter, Anne Freud, started to focus on this, okay? We all know who Sigmund Freud is, one of the grandfathers of human psychology, right? And Anne Freud she followed in her father's footsteps in terms of understanding human psychology and studying children, and she began the psychology of, or the mental health therapy world, one of the experts in starting to understand the psyche of children, right? She focused on this. And so 1920s started to notice that children experience the world differently. And that here we have in the 1990s, a book that comes out popular as ever, 1, 2, 3, let's count, and then you go to timeout, right? And what that does is it actually takes 70 years of debunked theory. And just some random doctor said, you know what? This is how I'm going to think about it. If I remember correctly, now this isn't a critique of the book. I'm talking about timeouts, and then I'm talking about why it became so popular. So I don't remember when I read it whether or not the person who wrote it was a psychologist or a medical doctor. But clearly they didn't understand how children learn like we do today, right? It's been 30 years, but that book is still in print and it's still touted by pediatricians who may or may not have been taught 30 years ago, right? So we know why it's still popular and still going around. Doesn't mean that it's popular and still going around because it actually is effective, okay? So once we have the history, once we know better, we can do better. So let's focus on this, right? So we've got this counting to three, and we've got this focus for children, expecting them to think like adults and expecting them to have conversations inside their own head. Now, if you are on your own personal development journey to notice that your own thoughts affect your emotions, I would venture to guess that you probably feel pretty uneven, unbalanced when your thoughts take over, right? When your worry thoughts take over, when your fear thoughts take over, when your anger thoughts take over, and that affects your emotions, right? So what that means is that if you are letting yourself know that you need to do your own internal work as a parent to change the way that you feel by also looking at your thoughts, which, you know, that's not the whole picture, but stay with me here, then I invite you to notice whether or not your child can be more capable than you at controlling their emotions through their thoughts. If you're now at 30, 40 some odd years old, starting to notice that this is, needs to be a priority, that it's harder than you think it is, that it requires guidance and study and constant practice. Why are we asking six-year-olds to be better at it than adults? So here's the deal. Inner speech does not start to become developed till age six. We've got that combined with impulse control that is not fully developed in terms of understanding cause and effect till age 25. And yet here we are saying, go sit over there on the couch or go sit over there on the stairs or the bench or go to your room and think about what you've done. It will not work to get you to your outcome. Your outcome, like I said, is for your child to feel internally motivated, right? That they are kind people and they can make kind, creative solutions when facing a problem. That is what resiliency is. Resiliency is persevering through challenge creatively. And sensitive kids learn how to break out of the meltdown cycle when their parents teach them to be playfully resilient, right? You guys have heard me say this before. This is something that I teach my clients. It is so important to understand that if your child is not creatively solving their problems and in fact is reactively solving their problems by smacking their sister when sister pulls out the crayon from their pile or from their hands or whatever, then you have a problem-solving child. They are just not intentionally solving their problems. You can't teach your kid to go think about it by themselves and to remember it in the moment. It's not how their brain works. So here's the deal. What does happen? Or if you're parenting a 9, 10, 11-year-old and you're not sending your kid to their room or to timeout anymore, but you did when they were little and now they're telling you that they hate you and life would be better off without them, or any of these, I want a different family, I'm going to run away, you're the worst. If they're saying any of this, then I want you to know how and why some of that is happening so that you can understand what has led to this point and also where you need to shift, okay? So timeout is definitely one of the tactics that is so ineffective in changing behavior, and it's also very effective at making kids feel crappy. And when you feel crappy or bad about yourself, when you have low self-esteem, you will not perpetuate high self-esteem behaviors. High self-esteem behaviors include creatively solving your problems, include asking for help, include acknowledging fault, include acknowledging the need for support to learn new skills, and include practice and persistence through challenge. So when you're using a timeout that separates the child from those whom they love, like you or the rest of their family, they will feel bad about themselves and then they will feel like bad kids. And there are no bad kids in this world. There are no children who were put on this earth to be miserable. And if your child believes that, despite the fact that they were not put on this earth to be miserable, then they will act miserably. They will make decisions rashly and not present to the moment because they feel yucky inside and nobody likes to feel yucky. Sad, mad, overwhelmed, anxious, nervous, negative in any kind of way. And when children don't know what to do with those emotions, they shut down on them. They close them down and they avoid them. So they either avoid them by stuffing their emotions and exploding later, or by shutting down and refusing to talk to you about them. And you are their parent. You are your child's therapeutic change agent. You are the one who shows your child how they belong in this world and that they are worthy of being taken care of no matter their behavior. That's what unconditional love is meant to do for children, right? So what's really important is to notice that the concept of timeout removes you in your relationship from your child's growth point. When you're telling your child, hey, you need to go grow outside of your relationship with me because I'm going to separate you from me, then you are actually teaching your child to isolate when they are stuck and not growing effectively. When they are not demonstrating a skill that they need to demonstrate in their development, you are teaching them to isolate themselves. So when we have 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds who are shutting down, who are saying, I can't, I won't, no way, it's all going to heck in a handbasket, you don't understand me, mom, you won't help, they won't help, teacher won't help, nobody gets it, I have no friends, even though they might be well-liked, what your child is telling you is that they don't know how to relate to others in challenge. And timeout directly leads to this shame-focused self-concept. And highly sensitive kids are more apt to experience shame. These are, like I said, children who feel their emotions deeply and more intricately because they are noticing more details from the world. They're taking in more information from the world. They notice other people's faces better and differently. They pay attention to communication from other people differently. And in this dynamic, this all puts us in a position to where we have to teach our children to feel more effective. And what gets stuck here is that our children end up feeling like they can't come to us. And so if you want your child to come to you and to tell you what's wrong before they explode or react, you can't be using a tactic that tells them that if they explode or react, they get removed from you. Right. So I hope that this is helpful in shifting some of your beliefs and your assumptions about how your child learns. This is step one in breaking out of the meltdown cycle. And we're going to keep this short today because while it is such a well-versed topic, it is so important for us to be paying attention to the fact that your child, if they are stuck in shame, that does not mean that they can't break out of it. It means that your change agents, the behaviors that you're using to help your child change, the management tactics that you're using to help your child change, they need to shift, and they have to first change with your perspective of what impacts your child's behavior the most. So if you need help changing this behavior and you need support in serving your child to break out of the meltdown cycle, then I encourage you to book a call with our team. Go to meganthompsoncoaching.com/talk. Talk soon. Bye now. Thank you for joining me on this episode of How to Parent Your Highly Sensitive Child Like a Ninja. We release a brand new episode every week, so be sure to click subscribe. If you like what you've heard and you're interested in seeing if you're a fit to work with us at MTC, here's what I want you to do next. Head on over to meganthompsoncoaching.com/call and book an appointment with our team. We'll get on the phone for about 60 minutes and we'll get you clarity on where you're stuck in parenting your sensitive child or teen, what your goals are for supporting your child's development. And if we can help you, we'll get you started on knowing exactly what to do to eliminate that meltdown cycle. Eliminating the daily meltdown cycle does not happen by itself. You need expert guidance to make it happen. And we've helped hundreds of clients from all over the world end that cycle in as little as 8 weeks. So to see if we can help you do the same, head on over to meganthompsoncoaching.com/call. I'm Megan Thompson, and we look forward to speaking to you soon.